This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C. and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. On today's Breakfast Grill, we are in conversation with Encik Shamsul Bahar Mohamad Noor. He is the CEO of the Malaysian Green Technology and Climate Change Corporation, or MGTC. That's an agency of the Ministry of Environmental and Water, CASA, which has been mandated to drive the country in its scope of green growth, climate change mitigation, and a green lifestyle. We have to start the conversation here because you are the lead agency for the government, and we must talk about the government's pledge to achieve net zero by 2050. Can you perhaps share a bit more about that pledge? What does that mean? How much work does it entail to get to net zero for Malaysia?
Okay, before I go on, let me just introduce the role of MGTC. We came a long way since the inception as Pusat Tenaga Malaysia back in 1998. Now we are fully known as Malaysian Green Technology and Climate Change Corporation, an agency under the Ministry of Environment and Water. We have three distinct purpose: to enhance the usage of green technology for both government and industry through incentivization, to spur the green economy and green growth. This includes investment, manufacturing of green products, procurement of green products as well, and also to introduce climate action programs to mitigate climate change by reducing the emission of greenhouse gases. Now, your question is, what will be our role in the mitigation programs? The government had announced that in the year 2050, we will be a net zero green greenhouse gas emission nation. And there's a lot of ways that we have worked out to ensure that not only the government, but also the industry, to come to the fact that everyone have a certain role to play. And in our distinctive position, we line up programs, we line up projects, we line up master plans and blueprints on how to achieve that particular target. So this goes on with all the sectors that we have put into task. Talk about the construction, the manufacturing, energy, transportation, waste. So those are the ones that we are focusing on, and those are the ones that are releasing greenhouse gas.
Before we talk about the initiatives, because I noticed that there are so many initiatives and many blueprints, you know, in order to meet that requirement, let's talk about the targets here. Correct me if I'm wrong, Malaysia's emissions about 215 million tons in 2018, 242 million tons in 2017. What is the current emission levels of Malaysia in 2021?
Okay, the target that we set earlier on is to, by 2030, we need to reduce 45% of the carbon emission. We are at about close to 30% at the moment. There's still a long way to work out all these initiatives to ensure that we meet the other 15%. But looking at 45% by 2030 is not enough. So that's the reason why the government have pulled up another target of achieving by 2050, we will be a net zero GHG emission nation.
But that's the biggest challenge, isn't it? Because that 45% target you mentioned in 2030 is based on a 2005 baseline. Is that the right baseline now? Because I think everybody is probably changing the baselines quite a lot. So if I fast forward, and if we are seeing greenhouse gases grow at a rate of 3-4% per annum, you know, since 2005, do you think we are just back to square one as where we are at the moment? And actually, the 45% target in 2030, as you say, is really not relevant and pointless.
Not exactly. When you look at all the roadmaps and blueprint that we came up with, the sector that we need to ensure that there'll be low emission would be the energy sector as well as the transportation sector. So with the recent national energy policy that was already been gazetted, as well as the low carbon mobility blueprint that we came up with, that approved by the cabinet last year, we set forth that by 2030, 100% of the government fleet will be electric. So this is to spur the interest of the public that the government is doing their initiative, and the public should also be adopters to migrating from ICE, internal combustion engine, into electricity. Because if you look at the numbers, both of the sectors, energy as well as transportation, are the major culprit in churning out the carbons.
I agree with you, and there's no debate here that, you know, for us, one of the key goals is to make sure that we make sure our energy source for our generation actually comes from renewable sources. And I understand that the goal is to generate at least 20% from renewable renewable sources by 2025. Correct me if I'm wrong. The question I have is that really MGT's role, or can it influence the likes of Tenaga to change its renewable energy sources? And what does it take to get someone like Tenaga to shift its energy sources over to renewable? Because at the moment, I believe it's close to 90%, right, that's fueled by coal and gas.
Okay, this is the stakeholders are quite a number of them. And we are one of the instruments that needs to drive the usage of renewable energy. The statement coming out of KETSA, the Ministry of Energy, is that by 2035, 40% will be renewable. Now, how do you get to the numbers? Solar is a no-brainer. It's already been installed in so many parts of Malaysia. But we need to look into another sort of energy carrier that will contribute a considerable amount of the percentage in introducing renewable energy into the energy mix. Now, hydrogen is one. And there's a lot of hydrogen projects that already been carried out. And one is in Sarawak, whereby the Sarawak government are pushing for the utilization of hydrogen to replace petrol and diesel for transportation, to replace coal for the usage of the industry. So as we move along, hydrogen will become a huge factor in the energy mix, that we will actually increase the numbers of renewable energy.
But hydrogen is not yet at scale, isn't it? It will take a long time to get there. So even this 2035 target, you were saying, correct me if I'm wrong, 40% renewable energy, that's a really tall order to achieve, isn't it? Even at this level with all these technologies in place.
You are right. But then again, if you look at the interest coming from the industry itself, more and more companies recently, KETSA announced the green energy tariff that they offer to the industry. And for those who subscribe to the GET, they would have to pay a bit more. But then again, the source of energy would be renewable energy. Now, this is just the beginning of the GET that the government will be introducing, because I just came off visiting a few solar farms in Kelantan and Terengganu, and the numbers are packing in order to increase the capacity. Just like, for example, in Kelantan, they're churning out 30 megawatt, and in Terengganu, another 100 megawatt. And in other parts of the country, we are putting in a lot of numbers in terms of megawatt capacity. And when you look into what Sarawak is doing, they are focusing on almost like 1,000 megawatt of renewable energy to be into the energy mix. Now, with all those numbers coming in nicely, it will be an exponentially driving the whole renewable energy. Not only, I believe it will not only be 40%, but it will be much higher than 40% come 2035.
I'm not sure, you know. I mean, if I reflect on what's been happening in the world in the past 6 months, if you look at what's happening, especially with the Russian-Ukraine conflict, and a very clear example is the United States, where President Biden has been pushing so hard for his green agenda, but the backs on his wall, he has to address energy security. In the past, we always think that climate change and accessing renewable energy sources is key to energy security. But the issue now with this conflict is that everybody has to sort out and get fossil fuels going, isn't it? And to ramp up production there. So how do we reconcile that? The whole need and desire for fossil fuels for the short term to meet the current energy demands in the moment versus this whole long-term gains and objectives. Don't you think that all this work and tensions now are going to compromise the long-term plans?
If you go to UK, the price of petrol have increased tremendously. I think it's like threefold. When we introduce electric vehicle to the transportation industry, there are not many adopters that wishes to migrate and convert their vehicle into electric. But now, since the price of petrol have gone up so high, there are more and more awareness as well as the consumers are purchasing electric vehicle. It's like a destructive sort of a game changer that the event in Ukraine has started and escalated, where there are more and more of the consumers are looking at, why should I pay so much for the energy, whereas I could utilize electric vehicle and still be paying quite a low amount for the whatever expenses that they might be forking out. So this actually created a shift from the usage of ICE to EV. I think this is like, it's not to say that it is a silver lining.
Yeah.
But then again, it does create that.
Yeah, but the function is that the alternatives which are renewable are still not attractive. I mean, if you look at the price tag of an electric vehicle here, it's still way more expensive than an ICE vehicle. Even with all the incentives that the government does throw in, the alternatives are still not attractive, isn't it? Especially in Malaysia.
The announcement by the Ministry of Finance that there will not be any tax for the importation of electric vehicle, and even to install a wall box at your home, there'll be a 2,500 ringgit rebate. Now, there are vehicles that are being introduced in Malaysia gradually that would actually be within the bracket that the public could purchase. In China and India, they are selling vehicles that cost only $5,000. If that were to be introduced in Malaysia, then you can see the masses will be jumping in and driving EVs.
So why are we doing that?
We are. But again, this is where the partnership and collaboration with the industry. You can see a bunch of Teslas on the road. You can see, say, for example, Mercedes-Benz or BMW. But now, there are more companies that are bringing in the other ones, the lower bracket, the middle income bracket. That vehicle will cost only about 30,000, 40,000. And for a 40,000 vehicle, you can drive, say, 125 kilometers with a single charge. So this is where we're looking at.
So,
and we're just in April now. And the announcement came just late last year. So you will see the numbers will be growing as we move along.
So what's the take-up been so far, 4 months in? Are we seeing a substantial take-up in EV vehicles in Malaysia since the incentives in place?
Definitely.
What's the number?
Just recently, I wouldn't say the number because the number is still small. But then again, the introduction of brands, of companies that introduced that this is an electric vehicle that we are putting into the market, because this is something very new. Without the incentive provided by the government, without the tax break given by the government, it is difficult to get to the early adopters. Now, what about the infrastructure? Because the public are looking on that as well, and they want to see the infrastructure being put in position similarly to the petrol kiosk. There you have about 5,000 of them throughout nationwide. But the government are looking at 10,000 charging stations to be installed by 2025. And once we are able to do so, then they call it the range anxiety will be minimized. We are really, really looking forward to actually get more and more of the public to move into EVs.
You have a very interesting role. I was just reflecting about the conversation we are having where you are at the intersection between policy, marketing incentives, public-private partnerships, changing behaviors of consumers and all. But my central question really is, do we really need an agency to do this? Why not just have it as a division or entity under the ministry? What is the role of carving this out as a separate corporation and entity?
Okay, part of the goals that we are looking at is to, our vision statement is to be a leading partner for green growth and climate action. You need a catalyst. You need an entity that will actually pull in the players to look in green technologies, utilization of green technologies, to look into ways on to reduce the carbon emission.
Why not within the ministry, though? I'm just wondering out loud. Why can't we just make sure it's done within the ministry?
Okay, we need an expert. Because when you look at the ministry, it's more towards policy making. It's more towards coming out with acts or regulation. But there is a need for a body that, because most of our staff coming from the industry, and we know, we understand what the industry needs and demands. So when we form up MGTC, immediately we understood the role is to assist the industry, to be their partner, to pull them in, and to ensure that there are participation by the industry to actually drive the economy and in being green. So this is the role of MGTC. Because if you just rely on the government, it's more towards coming out with what needs to be done. But what about things that needs to be implemented? So this is the role of MGTC as the objective stated out.
So the entity is necessary to basically attract the right talent and expertise to be able to translate policy and put in place incentives to work with the right partners. Is that correct? That the goal of the separate business is so that we can basically pull in the right external talents and expertise to move the program forward for the government?
Exactly so.
On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Encik Shamsul Baha Muhammad Noor, CEO of Malaysian Green Technology and Climate Change Corporation. After the break, we have a discussion on whether their incentives and promotional efforts have made a mark in greening Malaysia's economy. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On the Breakfast Grill, we have with us Encik Shamsul Bahama Mohamed Noor, CEO of Malaysian Green Technology and Climate Change Corporation. And he's in the hot seat as we earlier talked about the role and function of MGTC. Now, Shamsul, you've got many programs and initiatives actually rolling out. And one that struck me was the Green Technology Financing Scheme. Now, the objective for that is to provide easier access to financing for green technologies. Can you perhaps share the impact, the results of that scheme?
When we introduced the Green Technology Financial Scheme, what is this actually? This is where the government ensure that the industry players move into the manufacturing of green products. Their services are green. Their operation is green. So what we do, when the industry player, they are looking to apply for funding from the bank, say, for example, 50 million. So they come to us and we verify the whole operation and what is required in terms of funding. And once the verification is done, they will be receiving GTFS certificate. Now, they'll take the GTFS certificate and go to the bank. And what it does is that each of the 2% of the interest provided by the bank will be taken by the government, as well as 60% of the project funding will be absorbed by the government. So this gives a certain sort of a comfort zone for the bank to provide funding to the industry player.
So looking at the data, as of May 2020, you know, about 350 projects approved, total financing about 4.5 billion ringgit for the period over 10 years. Just comparing with overall Malaysia's domestic capital markets, 3.4 trillion. So this funding is really about 0.012% of total funding. That this really is a drop in the ocean. What does it take to scale this up to a larger level for Malaysia?
Okay, Philip, now, to look on how to grow the economy, we need to look at the GDP, gross domestic product. We have this green GDP. And what is GDP all about? GDP is about public consumption. It's about private investment. It's about government investment. And also, it's about net export. You take in the context of green. So what we're looking at is for the public to purchase more items, which is green products. For example, a refrigerator, which consume less energy, an air conditioner, which uses less energy, food products, which are organics, as well as items that do not actually use a lot of, release a lot of carbon. Now, this is important. And when you look at the other one, which is the private investment, so this is green private investment. You're looking at companies installing a solar farm for renewable energy purposes. Company trying to change their whole operation to make their operation green. That is green investment.
What is the percentage of our economy that's green?
To answer that, we are still quite low in terms of the numbers of investment. I think it's just below 1% at the moment.
Okay. What does it take? What do we need to do then to move the number up? What is the key levers and actions that you think MGTC needs to take to be able to move that percentage up higher?
Okay. As I explained earlier on the role of GDP, which would actually drive the numbers up. Again, the public consumption, the private investment, government investment, net green export. So looking at every one of them, you just take Mahija, for example. Mahija certification that MGTC issue out for companies that are producing green products. Now, what does it do? When a company receives the MyHijab certification, it is not only their products are green, but the government are looking at it as well. Because government has a scheme called Government Green Procurement, where 20% of the government products that they purchase and they procure have to be green. Green in the sense that it reduces energy usage, it reduces carbon footprint. Now, but the 20% coming from the list of 10,000 MyHijab products that we provide. So any government purchase from 2022 until 2025, 20% must be from the list that we provided. So you're looking that the government are putting this effort. And what we are working out now is not only on GGP, but also on the PGP. This is the private green procurement that we'll be introducing to private sector through Bursa as well as PMB, so that the company listed under them Very much in line with the government initiative to procure products which is green.
Building on that MyHijab, so we have 10,000 providers and suppliers which the government can procure to hit the 20%. How do you track and enforce that these 10,000 providers are actually green? Because they might have been certified green, but over a period of time may have strayed apart. So where is the enforcement mechanism to make sure that these suppliers are green?
We monitor each on every one of the operation once they apply for MyHijab certification. But we look at the operation part of the manufacturing process. We can actually know that this is not just greenwashing. This is truly ensuring that each of the products that they churn out are green. We have a certain mechanism and criteria that we listed for each of the application. So I wouldn't see that they'll be going back into utilizing a lot of carbon footprint from the whole process that they have provided to us.
This for major mega infrastructure projects like MRT3, ECRL, which are really very, very valuable to greening the economy, will there be a commitment to pursue green procurement practices there?
We have read a lot about the transportation industry, and more of the industry are moving into electricity. So once you move into electricity, yes, then you're utilizing a little bit of energy. Even though now there are a lot of coal-fired power plant, but more and more of the coal-fired power plant are being converted. So the commitment is there. It just takes a matter of when it will be implemented, but pretty much it will be implemented soon because the target that we are looking at is always 2050, become a net zero GHG emission nation.
Okay, let's just shift to the conversation I think you're quite passionate about, which is the low carbon mobility blueprint. When we talk about charging stations, because I think that's very key to driving, you know, electric vehicle mobilization coming through. The Deputy Minister, Dato' Lim Ban Hong, said that there were about 600 EV charging stations, and the target is to achieve 10,000 by 2025. That's about 3.5 years away, 40 more months to go. How are we going to deliver those 9,400 stations extra?
This is where we need partnership. So as our vision stated, we are the leading partner in green growth and climate action. So MGTC, to pull in 10,000 charging station, you need a huge budget, and government would not be providing all those budgets. So what we need is the industry player to answer to the call. What MGTC does, we identify partners that would be ready to fund and invest, as well as putting in the infrastructure. We have multiple agent players that we're looking at, and each and every one of them would have a certain numbers, because 10,000 is huge demand.
Yeah.
It is a huge call.
But are there any pre-commitments from the private sector to at least hit that 10,000 target? Do we know a sense of the commitment level from the private sector?
Yes, we have identified the players, and they are very much committed into it.
What's the commitment level?
The commitment level is huge, because almost every week there are companies that come to MGTC stating that they would like to take up the challenge of installing the charging station. So we have those commitments.
So 10,000 is very doable and feasible. We will get it done even earlier?
I believe so. We would be able to actually draw the numbers by 2025. Singapore are very ambitious. They're looking at 60,000 charging stations by 2025 as well. So 10,000 is not that much. But again, you have the infra, but we need the EVs. We need to bring electric vehicles that are suitable for the middle income, so that the price is not as much as what we're looking now. A 50,000, a 40,000 electric vehicle within that bracket will actually drive the numbers, as well as drive the interest of the private sector to have more infrastructure on the charging station.
Thank you, Shamsul, for taking the time. On the Breakfast Grill, I have with me Encik Shamsul Bahama Muhammad Noor, CEO of Malaysia Green Technology and Climate Change Corporation, or short for MGTC. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.